This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, a solo pod, just me talking baseball, talking NBA for the next 30 minutes or so. And boy, we have a stunner of a trade in Major League Baseball as Devers goes to the Giants. Shocked by that one. I'll get to that. Segment two, we'll do baseball, but we'll start with NBA here. A game five here on a Monday night with the Oklahoma City Thunder, evening the series at 2 Friday night in game four. So this game five here on Monday night with OKC laying 9.5, total 223.5. Then we will have a game six on Thursday. Boy, they really spaced this out. A game seven would be on Sunday. That's the whole purpose of all this, is to space out long enough where it goes long enough where they can line up a game seven on a Sunday, which is the best TV day. But I'm not sure we're getting there. I think OKC, and I'm very cautious to underrate and disrespect the Pacers after everything they've done this postseason. But I just feel like they missed a golden opportunity on Friday night to not close this out, because it was 3-1 if they go up, and OKC still has 5 at home and 7 at home, and they'd be favored mightily in those games. They'd even be favored by 5 or 6 in game six. They're just, their power rating is much higher than that of the Pacers. So I saw a lot of this, I'll get to it. I like the OKC on Monday. I think they roll. I think they win. I think they win going away. I think it's a very dangerous scenario. You've heard me talk about this in other sports. Anytime you let a team off the hook and you have a chance to put them away and you don't do it, that's just a bad omen. You give a team second life. And OKC was down 10 in the fourth quarter, about to be down 3-1, similar to, and I've talked about this game, made this comparison, Denver. They were down 8 in the fourth quarter, down 2-1 in game four on the road. They rallied in that scenario. I just think that Indy missed a chance to land the knockout punch. But I was about to say, I've heard a lot of this, that, well, the NBA, they made calls in favor of Indiana because they wanted, or in favor of OKC because they wanted it to be 2-2, and they wanted, a game seven. To me, if you wanted a game seven, I think Indiana winning was just as good as OKC winning, because if OKC's down 3-1, they get 5 at home, they're favored at 6. To me, that sets up the game seven. Now that it's 2-2, I think a game seven is less likely than had Indiana won. I really pushed back on this idea. Oh, the refs favored Indiana. They wanted a game seven. First of all, I don't think Indiana got that many calls. There were, yes, a lot of fouls called, but it was basically dead even in terms of the fouls called, in terms of the free throws. The only advantage the Thunder had in free throws was the last minute or so, because Indy was fouling on purpose, because Indy was, when you're down, 4 or 5 and the shot clock's off, you have to foul. So the Pacers, fouled 3 or 4 times in the last couple minutes, just trying to, stop the clock, get the ball back. That was the free throw discrepancy. And the fouls were basically dead even. I don't buy this at all, that, the refs favored, the refs favored OKC. The refs gifted that to OKC. Indy got screwed. There's always, I know the one that gave the OKC the lead and they never relinquished it, where SGA hit the little baseline jumper. And you say pushed off, he traveled. Yeah, he did. But I mean, look, there's hundreds of plays of the NBA calls, non-calls, to just freeze frame one of them and say, oh, bad call there, it was rigged. I mean, I don't buy that. If you're the Pacers, you want to blame anybody, blame yourself. He scored 1 point in the final 320. And I think if OKC does go on to win this series, which I think they will, you'll look back at, look, they were down 85-75. They were down 10 points. But you also look back at 4-point game, 3 minutes and change to go. SGA hits a 3. They get a stop. They hit another 2. That's the controversial call, non-call. And OKC never looked back. And I think that will be the turning point, ultimately, of the series. Now, again, look, I've underestimated the Pacers before. I've counted them out. I'm not counting them out, but I didn't think they had much of a chance in this series. They've, even though I don't think they're going to win it, they proved me wrong. They were up 2-1. About to be up 3-1. They played much better than I thought. I picked the Knicks against them, so I've been wrong about the Pacers. I picked the Cavs against them too, so I've been wrong about the Pacers. I've underestimated them. Doesn't mean I'm going to continue to be wrong. I just think this is a scenario where OKC is in good shape, and the fact that OKC shot 3 of 17 from 3 and still won the game with only 10 assists and 3 and 17. First of all, only 3 makes is bad. Only 17 attempts. We see in the NBA now, teams routinely shoot 35, 40 three-pointers all the time. So the fact that you only got 17 attempts up is to me an issue. But I think that's a good sign for OKC going forward, that even though their offense has been congested at times, it's been a mess at times, the fact that they're able to still pull that game out on the road with all of those offensive struggles, probably shoot it better at home, role players play better at home, that kind of thing. I think OKC has a big performance in them. I think they win, and I think they probably close it out in game six. I don't think we're getting a game seven here. I think that OKC has taken control here of this series. And look, I'm kind of rooting for a game seven, but I do think OKC wins easy in game number five. I think game six probably looks similar to game four here, where it's close, but OKC wins. I think Indy left one on the table here in game number four, and I think that's one they'll look back on for a long time. So that's the finals. It was weird to have an off night Sunday, no NHL, no NBA. And again, get to the baseball and the Devers trade here in a second. But trade in the NBA too. Orlando acquires Desmond Bane for four picks unprotected, a pick swap, and then Pope and then Cole Anthony. Man, I understand it that there's a couple things at play here. When you're stuck as a team in the NBA and you're the 6, 7, 8 seed and you lose in the first round, you want to get unstuck. And I get you can be in purgatory and you just want to do something to get out of that. And there's the other factor that the East is just not that good. Teams see the Pacers and say, all right, it's a good team, but we can beat them. We can compete with them. Teams see a path in the East. Teams see, you know what, if we're a pretty good team, if we're a 6 or 7 seed, one move away and we're in Eastern Conference Finals, and who knows? And you're a team like the Magic, you haven't had any success in a while. You've been a 6, 7, 8 seed, and you haven't been to a final in what, 15, 16 years. You haven't won a championship. So the fact that you have a path to maybe get to like a conference finals, I understand taking a chance on it. The fact that, you know what, you're in a position where if you hit on this trade like you think, and Bane's as good as you think, those picks you give up are all of a sudden not as valuable. So from that perspective, the picks become a little easier to swallow. But it reminds me of the Bridges trade where the Knicks gave up five first rounders for him. You know, Gobert, Minnesota, same sort of deal. DeJounte Murray to the Hawks. Anytime you just say it out loud, four first round picks unprotected for Murray, four first round unprotected here for Bane. That's just an overpay. And anytime you're giving up this kind of draft equity and you're not a championship contender, I just don't think it's a good move. So it's an overpay. I get it. I understand the thinking from Orlando's perspective, but to me, they just gave up, you know, one, maybe two too many assets. And to go all in when you're not a title team, I just don't think is a good move. So Orlando, 16-1 at FanDuel to win the title. I would never bet that. 30-1 at DraftKings. You know, East is wide open. Could you get to a conference finals? And you know what? Who knows what happens? You're probably not going to be in a position where you're a one or a two seed next year. But Banchero, Wagner, Bane, Suggs, Bane is a good fit here. You know, in that 50-1 range, I get it. I guess I get it. I don't love it. I wouldn't have done it, but I get it. You know, as far as the Memphis side of it, Memphis, I get it. You're getting all of those picks. You are different than Orlando, but similar in that you're stuck. And you know what? You got to pick a direction. I don't know if they'll go 100% here and just start trading off everybody, Morant and Jaren Jackson, and say, you know what? It's a seller's market. We could get a ton of picks for Morant, I would think. Although I think the return for Morant might not be as great as some people might think. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr., Morant, because Morant is hurt a lot. Morant's not a great 3-point shooter. He makes a lot of money. I mean, what are you really getting for Morant? You're going to get something. If you got four ones for Bane, you're going to get something similar for Morant, if not more, I would think. But you have off the court stuff with Morant too. But if you traded Jaren Jackson, you traded Morant, you could get a bunch of stuff back and just, you know what, tank. We're going to be bad for a year or two, but we got a ton of picks. We got our own picks, and we can just build and be bad for a year or two. And then once the West, hopefully, you know, who knows what it looks like 2, 3 years from now? We can just be the next OKC and just build based on assets. Maybe that's the route they go. I would think that's a smart way to go. So NBA offseason should be interesting. How about Durant asking for a trade and saying, here are the teams I want to be traded to. And he basically came out with a list. I think Rockets, Spurs in Miami, all places with no state income tax, all places with nice weather. Not sure what his motivation is there. Maybe it's just all money. Those teams, Miami's not winning at Miami. Spurs and Rockets, he could be, you know, competitive. Those are good teams, not probably not title teams, but I mean, how about the nerve of these NBA guys? First off, he held the Nets hostage, saying, you know what, fire the coach or trade me, then eventually trade me, but I only want to be traded to the Suns. The Suns end up trading for him and completely ravage their franchise by doing so. Complete overpay, massive overpay. They're in ruins basically for the next decade. No picks. All of the stuff they gave up was just an awful trade for Durant. How about Durant going to the Suns and saying, you know what? You guys traded for me. You gave up all this stuff. It didn't work out. I want to be traded, but you know what? Do what's best for you. Find the best deal for yourself. Get what you can, and then I'll go wherever you send me, because it's not like a team that's rebuilding or bad is going to trade for Durant, because a team that is going to be trading for a player of his age, of his caliber, thinks they can win on some sort of level immediately. So it's not like he's going to be sent to, the Hornets or something, or the Wizards. He's going to be sent to a decent team. A decent team is going to be trading for him. How about Durant doing the right thing and say, you know what? Yeah, it was bad for, it was a bad deal for you guys. I feel bad. Not that it was all my fault, but this deal didn't work out for you. I feel responsible for that partially. I'm not going to give you guys a hard time. Just trade me whatever gets you the best deal. But instead, you know what? I only want to go to these three teams. I ruined your franchise. Now I'm going to tell you where to trade. And it's really tough. Lillard did the same thing with the Blazers, where he signs an extension and says, I want to be traded. I only want to be traded here. These guys with these lists, they sign the contract. They act like the contract doesn't even exist. It just drives you nuts with how entitled, I think entitled is the right word, all of these players are. So a lot of news. Don't love it from the Magic standpoint. I get it. I don't love it. I like it from Memphis's standpoint. If I were them, I'd go all in. And I think OKC rolls here in game number five. I would lay the points with them, and I do think they win the championship on Thursday night. But who knows? The Pacers have been tough. Pacers have played well in that building. And by the way, that was a brutal, brutal non-cover for the Pacers, getting the six. It even got up to 6.5 in some spots on Friday night. Not only were they covering most of the way as a 6.5 point dog, they were winning most of that game, most of the game. And then, once you get behind 3, 4 points in the final minute, the foul fest starts and anything can happen. And you're fouling guys before the inbounds, which is the extra free throw. And they were missing free throw. Oh, just a disaster. Absolute disaster. If you bet the Pacers, that's a tough one. A couple of really bad beats. That and the Stanley Cup final game Saturday night, the total was 6.5. It was 2-0 in the third period. Five goals. See you later. Seven total. Game goes over. All five of those games have gone over in the Stanley Cup. So was hoping to see a seventh game in the Stanley Cup in the NHL, but it looks like Florida up 3-2, home for game six. Looks like they've been the better team. Well, it's been a fun, exciting series. I would think they'd probably close it out in game six, but home ice doesn't mean as much in hockey as it does, home field, home court in basketball, baseball. So we'll see. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we'll get game seven in both of these sports. We'll see how it plays out. I would think I would lean towards both ending in six at this point, but you know what? Six and seven, not that much of a difference. We can easily get a seventh game in I would say one of these. Can we get one game seven out of the two? It's been a decade since we've gotten a game seven, the NBA Finals, Cavs Warriors. It was just last year. We got a game seven Stanley Cup final between these same two teams. So we'll see if we can get a game seven once again here in either one of these. But Bane gets traded. I like it for Memphis. Don't love it for Orlando. I get it, but I think it's an overpay. Durant, just ridiculous. And I don't even know if Durant, does Durant even move the needle at this point? I guess if you trade him to the Spurs or Minnesota, I mean, he could still shoot. He's going to be able to shoot forever, but 37, 38 years old. He's an ornery guy. He's a moody guy. I don't know that he changes. What could he be? Could he be the second best player on a title team? Maybe. Maybe at this point of his career. But be curious what the return for Durant is. Anyway, but I do like OKC minus the 9.5. I think they cruise here on Monday night and they dominate at home and win pretty convincingly. I think game five looks like game two did, where up 15, 18 at half. Maybe the Pacers flirt with making a run at some point, but I think OKC puts a big number, a big margin here on the Pacers. And game one was on its way to being a domination. OKC couldn't close it out, but I actually think that helps OKC, knowing, hey, we got to keep the foot on the throat, keep the foot on the gas here. Even if we get a big lead, these guys can come back on us. So I think the fact that they blew the lead game one helps them pull away here in game five. So OKC minus 9.5 is the play. When we come back, Rafael Devers is no longer a Boston Red Sox. I can't believe it. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. Rafael Devers is a San Francisco Giant. I cannot even believe it. Just shocking. And it happens. A couple interesting things. Devers in the Red Sox, or Devers in the Giants, play the Red Sox this weekend coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Boston is in San Francisco. So Red Sox against Devers and his former team will see him immediately, almost immediately. This is one where I saw it and I thought it can't be real. Similar to the Luka deal. I don't think it's as bad as the Luka deal. I don't think it's as bad as the Mookie Betts deal, but this is an awful trade from Boston. I understand he can be a difficult guy, even more than that. I think you're making whatever, $30, $35 million a year, and I won't play first base. I won't play here. I won't play there. Not a team guy, and you don't want that. You don't want that around your younger players, and it clears space for your younger players. The trade is they get Kyle Harrison, pitcher, Jordan Hicks, pitcher, and a handful of prospects. Boy, I have a hard time making this deal if I'm Boston. I understand it clears spots for these guys. It clears up money, so now you can, go after either another bat or a front end starter. This frees up money to go after somebody else, and it gets him out of the locker room. It does a lot of those things. I get that, but to me, this is a horrible trade for the Red Sox. We're now 45-1 to win the whole thing. And Giants are 22-1 to win the whole thing. They just swept the Yankees. I was just going to lead with, the Red Sox own the Yankees. Part of that is Devers owns the Yankees. They're dangerous. They're a game over 500. This is probably even as good as Skubal and the Tigers are. This is maybe the last team the Yankees want to see in the playoffs. Cora is a good manager. Devers destroys them. Crochet at the top. And they're still dangerous. They still have Crochet. They still have a good manager. But boy, oh boy, in a league where it's impossible to hit, impossible to score runs, the league average is 240, 244, I think. Devers is not a good offensive player. He is a great, great offensive player. If you would have told the Yankees on Friday, hey, you get swept, but the Yankees, after the series, the Red Sox are going to trade Devers to the National League. I think every Yankee fan would say, you know what? I don't like losing the Red Sox, but where do I sign? Get that guy out of my division, get him off the Red Sox, get him off my rival, and get him out of my league on top of it. Boy, oh boy, I think this is a really shaky move for Boston. Again, I get it gives you flexibility. I get it. He was a pain in the neck, and you don't want, I get all that stuff. I have a hard time making this deal if I'm Boston. He is just such a good player, and he's just very hard to replace. Plus, he's clutch. He gets big hits. From Devers' standpoint, he's going to go to the best bit hitting ballpark basically in baseball, the short porch. Or the pesky Poland right, the monster, which you can basically reach out and touch with your bat and lefty. He's such a good opposite field hitter. And now you're going to go shaky weather in San Francisco. It's cold. It's a pitcher-friendly ballpark. He's still going to hit because he can hit, but he is not going to hit in San Francisco like he did in Boston. Plus, they're going to walk him a million times because that lineup stinks around him. So shocked by it. Absolutely shocked by it. And Harrison, the left-handed pitcher, was about to start. This deal was announced basically 7 o'clock Eastern. Harrison was about to start against the Dodgers 7:10 Eastern, so they had to pull him. I would imagine, they knew about this before it got reported, maybe an hour before. So I'd be curious the mechanics, the timing of, when they told him, "Hey, don't warm up. You're probably something might be going on here." So very fascinating, shocking the timing of it, shocking the name involved. If you would have told me, Devers hit a home run Sunday as the Yankees, as he always does against the Yankees, as the Yankees get swept. So the Yankees side of it here, I'll get to in a second, but just a shocking, shocking move, and one I understand. Again, same thing with Magic in the Bane trade in the NBA. I get it from their perspective, but I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I thought they gave up very little. Now, who knows how these prospects turn out? Maybe we're sitting here in 3, 4 years and all these prospects pan out and they get something out of Harrison and Hicks and you know what? Devers doesn't hit as much in San Francisco, and it looks like a halfway decent deal. Boy, I'd have a hard time. I don't care how difficult he is. I don't care what kind of prospects he is. I have a hard time putting that guy on another team. Oof, tough one. Very, very surprising. Again, Red Sox and Giants will play Friday, Saturday, Sunday in San Francisco. Fascinating, really fascinating to see that. But as far as the rest of the league here, Yankees, like I mentioned, get swept. It was right around this time last year. Remember, they were cruising and they started a nosedive. It was a series in Boston as the finals were wrapping up in the middle of June. Red Sox beat them a couple times. Yankees went into a terrible tailspin. I don't think you're getting that. I mean, they just didn't hit for a weekend, and they lost 5 out of 6. They lost 2 out of 3 last weekend. Same kind of takeaway I had last weekend is that you can see the Yankees are a good team, but they're a flawed team. They miss Weaver, but this again, this isn't about pitching. Fried's due to come back down to life. Rodon's due to come back down to earth. Both those guys are due to come back down to earth a little bit. The Yarboroughs and Schmidts of the world aren't great, so the Yankees have problems. But that's a pretty good lineup, 1-9. It's a pretty balanced. Again, it's not a great lineup, but it's a pretty good lineup. And Judge just struck out a million times. I just think it's one of those things where it's over 162 games. you're going to have little spurts like this. It's not like the Yankees are some juggernaut where, oh my goodness, I can't believe the Yankees are in a slump, or I can't believe the Yankees lost. The Yankees, look, three games in Fenway, a hitter's ballpark, they scored 4 runs. 4 runs. They lost 2-1. Couldn't get the ghost runner home on Friday night either. And here's the other thing with the Yankees. Their base running is atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. You get thrown out at third with nobody out trying to steal Friday night. Dominguez gets picked off Saturday night. I wasn't watching. I think it was LeMay who got caught between second and third, picked off. It wasn't even stealing on some. I mean, they're base running under Boone, their defense under Boone. And look, it's not all Boone. These players, look, you got to know better at this level, but you're either coaching it or you're allowing it. They are so undisciplined. They are so poorly fundamentally, like poor fundamentally sound, just poor fundamentals. It's an embarrassment how they play the game of baseball, including the fifth inning of the World Series last year. Again, it's not Boone's fault that Judge drops a pop-up, but it's a symptom that Boone is just too soft on these guys. They're just the fundamentals are so bad with the base running, the defense. And they run the bases like a bad little league team. They field at times like a bad little league team. It's just a joke the way they play. But I think the Yankees in the East, even though Toronto, Tampa, these teams have played better. Tampa always does more with less, and they just swept the Mets. But same thing with the Mets. Mets just get swept. I don't think their pitching's great. I think they're a good team. They're not a great team. But you have these little hiccups throughout the season. So to come on, you know, the Mets got swept. They're no good. They're frauds. Or the Yankees got swept. They're no good. They're frauds. I think this is just 162. These things happen. There's something there. I mean, there's a symptom that Griffin Canning, you know, is not, well, he's not exactly Paul Skenes, and these pitchers might come back down to earth for the Mets. The fact that they went into this series leading the rotation in ERA, and now Senga's hurt. Like, these teams have issues, and maybe these weekend games highlighted the issues. But again, I wouldn't overreact too much. Long season, these teams have bad series, bad weeks. Yankees still up 4 in the loss column on Tampa, 5 in the loss column on Toronto. As we go through the standings here, Detroit 8-game lead in the loss column. You figure they're in good shape to win the Central. On Minnesota and Cleveland, Kansas City's played terribly here. Kansas City's lost 6 in a row. They're now 4 games under. Houston, man, Houston, not the same lineup, not the same offense, but they have a 4-game lead in the loss column over the Mariners. Texas back to 500. They've played a little better recently. They've won 4 in a row. They've won 7 out of 10. They're starting to swing the bats better. Angels at 33 and 37 are no good. A's you can forget about. And then you go to the National League. Mets, a now 2-game lead in the loss column. If they have lost 3 in a row, the Phillies have won 4 in a row. So that lead was, you know, 5.5 games. Last time we did a show on Friday, it's down to 2 games. I'll say what I've basically been saying the entire time in the NL East. I think it's Mets, Phillies. I think it's down to the wire. It's probably down to the last weekend, depending on injuries, who trades for who. I think those teams are very evenly matched. I'd give the slightest edge to the Mets, but it's back and forth. That should be a good race. Braves lost a game to the Rockies on Sunday. They played a little better, but they're still 8 games under, and they have a lot of digging out to go, a lot of digging out to do. In the Central, Cubs 6 games ahead of Milwaukee. Reds have played a little better recently, 7 out of 10. They're 2 games over 500. So the two teams everybody loved before the season were the Reds and the Red Sox. Two, I don't even want to say sleepers, because when everyone thinks you're going to be pretty good, you're not a sleeper anymore, because they were so popular in terms of teams people were picking. But Reds now 2 games over. I don't think they can win that division necessarily, but getting over their win total, 78 and a half, I think it was, that's certainly in play here as they're 2 games over. Dodgers and Giants are playing right now. Giants obviously have a new third baseman. I would imagine Devers does play third once he gets to the Giants. Giants only a game up on the Giants. Dodgers a game up on the Giants, 2 games up on the Padres, and 6 games up on Arizona. Arizona's played better recently, even though Burns is hurt, Martinez, the reliever, is hurt. Arizona has played better. They're 36 and 35. They've had a bunch of ridiculous, incredible come from behind wins. They were down 4 in the ninth Saturday night, scored 5 in the bottom of the ninth, walked off with a win. Last Thursday against Atlanta, they're down 6. They scored 7. And then they had a game against Milwaukee early in the season where they're down 4 or 5 runs, and they scored enough runs. I think they were down 4 and scored 5 to walk off Milwaukee in that game. So that's just an incredible streak of comeback wins. I mean, you get one of those type of wins, you're down 4 or 5 runs in the ninth inning. You win maybe you win one of those games every year, every other year. They've won 3 already. It's the middle of June. So Dodgers still. And they're going to get Ohtani back on the mound pretty soon here. Dodgers still probably in good shape to win the division despite the ridiculous amount of injuries that they have. And it's interesting with Ohtani, where he's throwing these simulated games usually, and he's missed a ton of time. It's been since August of 2023 since he pitched. Usually, when you miss this much time on the mound, what you do is you go on rehab starts and you make two, three, four rehab starts, but you don't want to lose Ohtani's bat for this long, where he's, going all over the country in the minor leagues pitching. So I guess they're just going to do simulated games until he's ready, then throw him off the mound for a couple innings in major league games and see how it goes. Because I don't think you're going to waste his bat in rehab starts. So that's a fascinating dynamic. But as far as the odds, Yankees still -525 to win the AL East. If you're interested in the Red Sox at 17-1, I don't know why you would be after the Devers trade. Before the move, it would have been maybe more interesting because I do think the Yankees gave the Red Sox life this last couple weeks here, where the Red Sox look just like a dead team, maybe even a seller. And boy, I'm just still shocked by that trade. But the Red Sox did play well this weekend. Blue Jays 9-1, Rays 11-1. I think the Yankees still in good shape to win that division, as the odds indicate. Tigers -650 in the Central. Astros -$1.80 in the West. Mariners are +265. Rangers +550. If I had to bet anything, I think the Rangers with DeGrom, with their lineup, which has played terribly, but has a lot of potential. Rangers +550, not a bad bet there. Mets are -$1.95 in the East. Phillies +165. Looks a little inflated, even though I think ultimately the Mets probably win. I would be laying $1.95. And if at these prices, I would just take the +165 here with Philly. Cubs -350 in the Central. They're probably going to win that division. Reds 17-1 is interesting, but they're too far back. Cardinals and Brewers are both 7-1. I don't think they're good enough to catch the Cubs. And the Dodgers are -500 in the West, which is interesting because they're only one game up, but they're the Dodgers, and their win total before the season was 104.5. Giants are 7-1. Padres are 13-1. Diamondbacks are 15-1. Is anyone worth taking a shot? Padres at 13-1 is interesting. Giants with Devers helps. I mean, that helps, but are they good enough to actually beat the Dodgers over 162? I would think not. I would think not. Again, I think Devers in that ballpark, in that lineup, is not going to be as productive, and he's going to get walked a ton. I think he's going to get walked a ton in that ballpark. Padres at 13-1 is interesting. If you had a free bet or something, that might not be a terrible way to go. They've been up and down, to say the least. And the Dodgers probably win that division, but again, is there value on the -500 for the Dodgers? I wouldn't think so. Just quickly, the college baseball, we get Murray State and Arkansas elimination game here Monday afternoon. Arkansas LSU was the big game. We spent a lot of time on the College World Series last week. LSU wins, so Arkansas is now in the losers bracket. Arkansas is a -500 favorite over the Cinderella Murray State, who lost to UCLA. So that's an elimination game Monday, 2 o'clock Eastern. That's fun. This is the fun part of the College Baseball World Series, where you get these 3 or 4 days where you get a bunch of day games during the week. And if you don't watch a lot of college baseball, it's and you want to give it a try, you turn it on and just kind of background noise. It's an enjoyable sport to watch, enjoyable sport to bet. Not as much offense as you think. We talked about this with Ben Wilson, I think, on Friday, where I think going into this Sunday night game, there'd only been like maybe three homers hit. It's a big ballpark. Wind's blowing in a lot of the times. It's a very pitcher-friendly ballpark in Omaha. So, man, Rafael Devers is a San Francisco Giant. This is not, again, this is not quite the Luka trade to the Lakers. If that one's a 10, and that one's just, man, that's an 11 out of 10. If that one's a 10, this is not a 10, but this is like an 8 or a 9. This is that level of surprise. I guess it shouldn't be because of the log jam they had with the young players and the fact that Devers was pouting and he refused to play the field, all of that stuff. But he's still Devers. He's still a monster player. They just sweep the Yankees, and next thing you know, he is in the NL West. So, man, it is going to be unusual to see him in that San Francisco Giant uniform when they take the field next. But boy, if you're the Yankees, a bad weekend got a lot better, because you would trade three losses, I think, to the Red Sox to get Devers out of your life, out of your hair, going forward. Red Sox are in action Monday night. They play the Mariners. They go to the West Coast. Gilbert is back for the Mariners. Mariners $1.82 favorite. Yankees soft schedule coming up. They get the Angels a bunch, the A's, the Orioles can hit, but the Orioles are not great. So Yankees can maybe get back on track. They're -208 against the Angels. Nationals, Rockies. Nationals are -208. Boy, imagine me the Rockies. The Nationals and Jake Irvin are not exactly, prime Pedro Martinez, and Jake Irvin and the Nats are laying 208, which I get it. I understand. So light baseball card on Monday. You do have the college, and you do have the NBA game on Monday. And I mentioned earlier, OKC -9.5 is the play for me, but that'll do it. A lot going on. A crazy day here with the very random NBA trade to start the morning, and then the shocker here with Devers going to the National League, going to the Giants. So We will be back Wednesday. I'll have a guest either get ready for game six, probably do game six of the finals is what could be the last day of the NBA finals. You know what's weird? If we do go to a game seven, it's Sunday, June 22nd. So basically, a week from yesterday. Sunday, June 22nd. The draft is Wednesday, June 25th. So there's like a 2 day break between the draft and game seven of the finals, or game seven of the finals and the draft, if it does go seven. But again, I'm not sure we're getting game seven here. I think OKC might have wrestled away momentum in this series. But enjoy game five. Let's hopefully get a winner here with OKC. Be back Wednesday. See you then.